driving memory. It's not
a good morning call. We will begin with our deliberations for today. We are now in item 12, building international solidarity to address the global education crisis on the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, where we will have a keynote debate with Domenico Rosa, DG INTPA, European Commission. Dear colleagues, welcome to this morning's session of the Assembly. We start with a keynote debate on building international solidarity to address the global education crisis in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. The global disruption to education caused by the COVID-19 pandemic constitutes the worst education crisis on record. Most countries in the world closed schools and higher education institutions as part of their strategies to combat the pandemic, with closures affecting more than 1.6 billion students. Remote learning opportunities varied widely in terms of quality and reach. Learning losses have thus been immense, with the most marginalized children and youth, and especially girls, disproportionately affected. On the occasion of the International Day of Education, 24th January, Antonio Guterres, the United Nations Secretary General, warned that unless we take action, the share of children leaving school in developing countries who are unable to read could increase from 53% to 70%. To give impetus for a shift from crisis to recovery, Guterres is convening a summit on transforming education in September 2022. So today's keynote debate is thus very timely. To inform and guide our discussion, I am grateful to Mr. Domenico Rosa from the European Commission for agreeing to make an introduction on this topic at very short notice. Thank you very much, Mr. Rosa. You have the floor for 10 minutes.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Mr. Co-chair. I think that definitely this is a subject of the utmost importance for everybody. And even before the COVID-19 hit, the world was experiencing a learning crisis. 258 million children of primary and secondary school age were out of school, and the learning poverty rate in the low middle income countries was 53%. There is this concept of the learning poverty that is very important because it predicts the failure in the following education system. I would say the learning poverty concept is the means that a child of 10 years old should be able to read, but not only to read, but to understand what is reading. And this is something that is very important because in many cases, people are able to, I would say, mechanically read without understanding what is the text. And I think that this is definitely a concept on which we should focus our attention if we want that the education system could work in the long run. Meaning, this means that, as I was saying, that over half of the 10 years old children could not read or understand a simple test. And in sub-Saharan Africa, unfortunately, this figure is also much higher and is close to 90%. The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the learning crisis, and the impact on the human capital of this generation of learners is likely to be long-lasting, unfortunately. At the peak of school closures in April 2020, 94% of students, or 1.6 billion children, were out of school worldwide. And still, around 700 million students today are studying from home in a context of huge uncertainty and with family and schools having to navigate across option of hybrid and remote learning or, in the worst of the case, no schooling at all. In the vast majority of countries, there is no end in sight to this uncertainty. Early evidence from several high-income countries has already revealed learning losses as increases in inequality. Young children are particularly at risk since the pandemic is exacerbating existing disparities in nutrition, health and stimulation, and services to support these children are too often overlooked in the pandemic response. Most early childhood education institutions are closed, and the unique nature of the pandemic places parents as the first-line responders for children's survival, care, and learning. This places a heavy burden on all families and especially the most vulnerable. Adding to this global shock to the education system is the negative impact of the unprecedented global economic contraction on family incomes, which increase the risk of school dropouts and also result in the contraction of government budget and strain on public education spending. The extended school closures, together with this economic downturn, is a twin unprecedented shock to education. Due to learning losses and increases in dropouts rate, this generation of students stand to lose an estimated $10 trillion in earnings and almost 10% of global GDP, and countries will be driven even further off track to achieve their learning poverty goal, potentially increasing the learning poverty level to 63%. The unique nature of this pandemic place parents as the first-line responder for children's survival, care, and learning. Historical data and initial evidence from this pandemic suggest an unqualified catastrophe in the making. COVID-19 poses an even higher risk to girls' education and well-being, and as the girls are most likely to drop out of school and are the most vulnerable to violence and face child marriage and adolescent fertility. Vulnerable groups, such as children with disability, ethnic minorities, refugee and displaced people, are also less likely to access remote learning materials and to return to school post-crisis. As a result, this generation of students, and especially the more disadvantaged, may never achieve their full education and earnings potential. This is not acceptable, and urgent and effective action is required to address these differential learning losses, which is critical to moving forward so that this gap don't widen in the future. The European Commission has always been paying attention and devoting resources to the sector of education and culture, also before the COVID crisis. Surely the COVID crisis has highlighted the importance of education, but it's important to recall that we have been working on the topic also during the last EU financial framework in the context of the OACP-EU partnership. Of course, unfortunately, the COVID-19 has wiped out much of the progress toward the achievement of SDG 4 by aggravating the already existing learning crisis at all levels of education. Since the beginning of the COVID-19, the EU has been working with partner countries to minimize the impact of the pandemic on learning and the well-being of children. Moreover, it's important to highlight that the pandemic had a severe impact not only on basic education, but overall on education and training opportunity. Where possible, the EU Education Cooperation Programme were adapted to help government to ensure delivery on education services, distance learning, curriculum adaptation and support to the teacher. Just to give an example, you know that the Commissioner is paying specific attention to education, and she proposed to increase the fund devoted to education that were originally set at 7% to at least 10% to improve education worldwide with a specific focus on quality by investing in teacher. I think that investing in teacher is one of the most important things if we want to achieve with the learning poverty. Equity by promoting girls' education, and last but not least, that is very important in terms of vocational training, in trying to match the skills with the emerging labor market needs. If we want to have investment that are creating jobs in the different countries, we have to provide also the workforce that is able to respond to the request of the private sector in this specific sector. There is not one size fits all solution. I think that this is something that has to be adapted and studied according to the different characteristic of the different nation. The increase of the EU external budget for education and skill is estimated at over 6 billion euro, including country and regional program, including Erasmus Plus, that is, an EU flagship initiative that was very successful in promoting the exchange of students inside Europe, and we are proud to offer to the external partner this possibility. We consider that we have now Erasmus generations in Europe that are, I would say, the best guarantees for the future in order to create personal ties, to create mutual understanding, and to try to prevent, I would say, fact like the war that is now shaking the continent. I mentioned already this this support to the vocational training, and I think that also tertiary education is very important. In this sense, it's very important to provide to university the possibility of having access to, affordable internet connection. I think that the modern technology will allow to create, I would say, campus that are virtual campus that are covering the different continent, and we hope that with an alliance of the European University, we, together with African, Caribbean and Pacific University, we will be in a position to create this, and this could be one of the projects, an OECPS campus in terms of tertiary education. I would stop here. Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair, for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosa, for that presentation. We have a speakers list. With those indicating an interest to speak on this topic, we will now start with Honourable Naib Eritrea. You have 2.5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-President, for giving me the opportunity to share our humble experience. As backdrop information, Eritrea has a population of 3.5 million. Out of this, around 20% are students at all levels. There are more than 2,300 schools and 7 colleges in the country to face this crisis. What did we do? We came up with a path to recovery employing the following different strategies. First, the government established a national COVID-19 task force with a wide network throughout the country to take all the necessary actions for prevention. Secondly, the Ministry of Education activated the already existing emergency preparedness plan and strategies intended to address any man-made or natural disaster that might affect teaching and learning. Thirdly, the Minister of Education invigorated the already existing school health program implemented in schools jointly by the Minister of Education and Minister of Health before the appearance of the pandemic. This was intended to take care of the overall health conditions of students. The availability of health facilities within a radius of 5 to 10 kilometers in almost 80% of the schools enabled to give effective medical services. All these organs were assigned to specific tasks according to their mandate. As regards teaching and learning, we deployed multi-model strategies like teaching via TV and distribution of print materials to students to read and assignments to work at home till school opens. Eritrea was among the first countries that declared lockdown, and people showed obedience and complied with all the rules and regulations issued by the task force. What was the result? Eritrea was not hard hit. There were 9,728 infected persons, 103 deaths, and 9,623 recovered from the pandemic. 2 persons are still under treatment as I speak. No death among the students, and the few who were infected recovered soon. As regards international response, the Global Partnership for Education, the GPE, offered $10 million for the Ministry of Education. But since the government was able to cover all the necessary expenses, there was no need to external support. And with the internal resources, we were able to ameliorate the situation, although the closure of schools for 1 year was one of the worst education crises on record. I thank you, Mr. Co-President.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Eritrea. And I'll give the floor to Ms. Lukasiejewska. You have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Szanowni Państwo, każdy kryzys, każda pandemia...
Dear Chair, any crisis, any pandemic, any war impacts the poorest and the weakest. The same holds true for the coronavirus pandemic. We had to move on to remote instruction, remote online education, and this laid bare our problems both in our ACP partner countries but also in Europe. This only served to exacerbate the differences between poorer and richer countries and regions. So poverty, lack of access to internet. Before the pandemic, a quarter billion of children throughout the world were outside of any education system. Due to the pandemic, 1,600,000,000 students were forced to abandon stationary or any instruction because they had no access to internet or computer. This is the result of poverty. So, for the very first time in modern history, a whole generation of young people will have experienced a destruction of their instruction curriculum and instruction career. This will mean that a lot of young people who abandon schools will never go back to those schools. So, as we said, war impacts children and women, and COVID also impacts to a highest degree children and girls, especially. Without our support, those hundreds of millions of young people will not be able to go back to learning. I'm very pleased that European Parliament and the Commission have prepared all those assistance programs, but all funds, all assistance is too small indeed. The UN is saying that, or wanted to guarantee access to education to all children up until 2030. And now we know very well that this will not be possible. Ladies and gentlemen, in Western Africa, in Yemen and Afghanistan, children are at high risk that they will not be able to go back to education after quarantine. The pandemic has been an interesting lesson for all of us. Online education, new technologies, internet access granted to poorer children. All of this could be a chance for those children so that they get at least basic education. I think this is what we owe to our children, to the following generations. This is what we owe to those countries which today have no access to technology, internet, or running water. An educated society is one where democracy and welfare flourish, so we should spare no effort to change this.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Ms. Lukasiewicz. And now I give the floor to Honorable Dullo, Ethiopia. You have 2 minutes.
Honorable, if I may, if I could take the next floor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ethiopia. Let's move on to Mr. Hyde. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much, co-chair. Development should be the heart of politics, as education should be the brain of politics, because education should always be the priority of politics, and education is the key to sustainable development of our society, to prosperity and a secure livelihood in all regions of our continents. Strong education systems expand access to opportunities, improves health, and strengthen the resilience of communities. It is also a key driver for reducing poverty, promoting economic growth, achieving gender equality and social development. Education provides stability, structure, and hope for the future and helps children and young people overcome trauma caused of war, disaster, or conflicts. The global disruption of education caused by the pandemic constitutes the worst education crisis on record. The crisis has brought education systems around the world to a standstill, with school closures affecting more than 1.6 billion students. Although most every country in the world offers distance learning opportunities for students, the quality and reach of such initiatives vary widely. In particular, young people from socially disadvantaged backgrounds suffer most from the fact that the distance learning is impossible due to a lack of digital infrastructure and cramped living conditions. Refugee students in minority or disadvantaged community, displaced and refugee students, and those in remote areas are at the highest risk of being left behind. The school closures also had a negative impact on the students who had access to digital learning platforms. In addition to the educational benefits, schools offer the students a place of retreat and consolidated structures that promote a sense of community and personality development and provide a break from life in often difficult family circumstances. For all the need to drive the digital transformation in education, online learning is a valuable supplement, but not an equivalent substitute for classroom learning, especially for the development of social skills that are so important for mental health. The end of the pandemic must be an opportunity to address the weaknesses that the virus has exacerbated, but that have always been present in our educational systems. More than 250 million school-aged children were out of school, and only a quarter of secondary school children in developing countries were leaving school with basic skills. COVID-19 has shown impressively what inequalities in education mean and how big and huge they are. So our priorities have to be getting students back into schools and learning institutions as soon as and safe as possible. A priority for education and funding decisions. National education budgets need to be protected and increased. Targeting the hardest to reach, those at greatest risk of being left behind, minority groups, refugees, people with disabilities, people in emergencies and crises. Now is the time to shift from crisis to recovery and beyond recovery to resilient and transformative education systems that truly believe deliver learning and well-being for all children and youth. Thank you.
Thank you for your intervention. Mr. Hyde, I now give the floor to Honorable Obanj Gabon. You have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, President. President, educational systems have caused a huge amount of debate. We've had strikes, reforms, and so on and so forth. And each system has its own specificities. And these systems generally are linked to culture, the values, the traditions of each country. So the way we can stave off this crisis is by seeing progress made in our education systems to follow suit with progress elsewhere, and that we rise to the challenges that we're facing today, such as the COVID-19 pandemic. We need to strengthen social ties, promote cohesion and solidarity. We need to follow the recommendations of international organizations in order to reinforce and technology. Now, when it comes to the health crisis, it remains, and we have challenges in terms of communication. Installation of electrical equipment will make it possible to have improvements. Now, the lockdowns linked to COVID-19 has meant that access to schooling was severely challenged, right through from primary to university. So people have to catch up on their education and training. And here, new technology will be needed so that we can roll out electrification programs as quickly as possible. In Gabon, we set up an e-education system, which meant that we were able to train 65 specialists in all sorts of subject areas and high officials as well. And it allowed families to be able to access distance learning through TV, radio and the internet. In this current climate, it's important that UNESCO set up mechanisms so that we can make long-term improvements in education and be resilient with regard to potential future crises. We must join forces with the UN and other organizations so that we can face the challenges that came with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Thank you very much, Gabon, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Salah, the Gambia. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable President. We had looked at the reducing the out-of-school children in one of our motions in this assembly. But then the pandemic has shown that we are dealing with more crucial issues in the world than we had imagined. Education deals with three elements: knowledge, skills, and values. And education must be seen to be the basis of nation building, especially for us in Africa. Without building from the roots, the children, we will not build nations. So education is primary to us. And what the pandemic had done was to disrupt education. And what we must do now is transform education to serve our means of building a nation that will eradicate all this terrorism that we talk about. Because if we build nations where people know that they belong to a country, and they love their country and they love their people, they have a contract with nation and people, you will not have terrorism. The absence of the state in building its citizenry is the primary cause of all those other problems that we are now experiencing. But we focus on GDP, but we don't focus on the relation between qualified teacher and student. Now we have seen that, well, not education being only primary, but there is something that can also disrupt education, and that is health. And we do not look at the number of doctors and patients, the drugs that are available to be able to handle this. Our whole health systems are weak. We cannot engage in research. We do not engage in vaccine production. We are totally dependent. So it is important for the ACP states to reinvent our development plans. Sovereign national wealth is what enabled Kuwait, Singapore, and all these countries to be able to develop. Angola has oil. The Arab countries that we see today, Qatar, etc., all they relied on was their oil. Of course, we are talking about green energy at the moment. But essentially, prior to that, what is preventing us from building together, just like Europe built together, come together, build our, as they build their World Bank, as they build their IMF, to be able to come from recovery, what is preventing ACP from building those institutions so that we can build sovereign national wealth and address the issue of health and education? Without addressing these two issues, we cannot in any way talk about sustainable development. So the pandemic is a teacher to all of us, universally. Of course, Europe must learn, we must learn, developed countries must learn that the pandemic has shown that all systems are weak, but together, systems will be strong. It is telling us, let us come more and more.
Thank you, Honorable. Maybe just got to
universal home that will guarantee the survival of humanity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the Gambia, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Ms. Hersberger. You have 3 minutes.
Hersberger.
It's Hertzberger, I believe. Did you mean to call on me for the Greens?
Oui, ça doit être moi, je suis.
Yes, it must be me. Hertzberger. Yes, it's you. You can say.
Yeah. Hertzberger. Okay.
This one, no?
Yeah, Hertzberger for fun, yeah. Okay. Good. Also, merci donc, monsieur le.
So, thank you, Chair. The pandemic had a great effect on education, and the digitalization of education is progressing in the African continent, but we do face a digital gap between rural and urban areas. The pandemic has imposed distance learning or remote learning, which has led to several challenges that we need to overcome, specifically objective 4, free and quality education for all. So we need to unblock the necessary funds at the EU level in order to guarantee remote learning in the poorest regions and to ensure that distance learning, which has been difficult for children in less favored regions, block the necessary funds at the EU level in order to guarantee remote learning in the poorest regions and to ensure that distance learning, which has been difficult for children in less favored regions, so that these children are not left by the wayside. Bringing on board civil society, and especially from my member state, Germany, have made remarkable work in evacuating some African students to Germany, and the same in associations of the Belgian diaspora. But we need to do more. Just 2 weeks ago, I wrote to the president of our university, Friedrich Alexander Erlangen University, to ask all students studying in Ukraine to come to Erlangen to continue their studies without any bureaucratic obstacles. And in fact, students in developing countries, particularly in Africa, studying in African universities, cannot stay in Germany unless their country of origin is at war. So I'd like to suggest that all African students who are carrying out university studies in Ukraine, this, regardless of their nationality, are allowed to continue their studies in host countries in the EU. As an international community, it is in our interest for young people to invest in their future through education. The European Union needs to take up its responsibilities and keep open access to education to all those escaping war. So I call once more on the member states of the European Union to show solidarity and to ensure that African students who are studying in Ukraine find a new perspective for their future and educational opportunities in EU universities. With all the horrible images we are seeing and with all the suffering we are hearing about, our common will to defend those who lost everything and who are seeing their future crushed need to be helped. If we don't take up proper aid in the EU, they will fall by the wayside. We need to give them educational opportunities in the EU. We need to show absolute solidarity, seeing as we really give high importance to young people in education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sbega Fofana, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Clark, Jamaica. You have 2 minutes.
I beg to decline.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamaica, for yielding. And I'll give the floor to Ms. Basel. You have 3.5 minutes.
Grazie Presidente, cari colleghi. In questi 2 anni di pandemia le fasce più giovani della popolazione hanno sofferto sia dal punto di vista sociale che dal punto di vista educativo. Quando nelle nostre città si riempivano gli ospedali, venivano chiuse le scuole e i ragazzi dovevano tornare alla modalità di apprendimento a distanza. Per quanto potenziale possa avere la didattica a distanza, è stata lanciata senza preavviso e con pochissima preparazione.
Thank you, colleague. Can we check our translation interpretation? Sorry.
Yes. Testing the interpretation. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear the interpretation? Could the chair confirm that he can hear the interpretation? This is the English booth. Can you please confirm?
All right. Confirm, I can hear. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, please continue.
Let's start.
Thank you. Start. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Dear colleagues, in these 2 years of pandemic, the youngest in our populations have suffered, both from a social and an educational point of view. When we saw hospitals getting filled up in our cities, schools were closed, and young people had to resort to distance learning. Despite its great potential, this distance learning was launched without any preparation, and it has made these 2 years nearly useless from an educational point of view. The pandemic has shown the importance of traditional education, not only when it comes to preparation, but also from the social point of view when it comes to human interaction. We've also seen an impact on mental health because we saw an increase in feelings of uncertainty and stress. We also saw revenge porn, child pornography, all of this led to many victims amongst young people. And we need to adapt our digital access because having computers, tablets, and access to internet have become a must-have for young people. Our young people are the future of tomorrow, made up of men and women who were born after the September 11th attacks, and they've grown up in a completely different world than the one we grew up in. For the future of our nation, of Europe, and the entire world, we need to make learning and education be at the center of our initiatives. Difficult times make strong men and women, and we need to give them the tools to show that they are strong. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Ms. Basso. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Songwe Malawi. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for granting Malawi the opportunity. Malawi wishes to join others who have contributed before that the COVID-19 pandemic has devastated all countries across the globe, especially OACP states, have suffered greatly due to the poor infrastructure system in our education set up in the region, which failed to cope up with this pandemic. In Malawi, the COVID-19 pandemic has not spared us, and we have experienced challenges that surpassed our capacities to handle them. In our education sector, COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted our schools' calendar because when government declared it as a national disaster in May 2020, all schools were made to close and learners were forced to stay at home for over 6 months. This situation made us in Malawi to realize that we were having serious problems in our education system because most of our schools could not function since they have no internet facilities to offer online education services to the children, and also it exposed poor or lack of wash facilities. The problem was severely compounded, especially in rural areas, which led to untold problems such as increased early marriages and pregnancies amongst the girl child, alcoholism, and other delinquent behaviors by the youth because they had nothing to do in their homes. Malawi wishes to urge the OACP states and the European Union to come up with concerted efforts that will build an international solidarity in addressing education challenges that we faced in the light of the COVID-19 pandemic. This will include, among others, creating a regional fund that will support the education sector in the OACP states, that would be invested in WASH programs and digital transformation initiatives that would support our education system to withstand the test of time in delivering education services to our children and in the midst of the pandemic such as the one we are experiencing now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Malawi, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Sarid Imbakong Mali. You have the floor. 2 minutes. Let us move on. I now give the floor to Mr. Botenga. You have 1 minute.
Merci.
Thank you, Chair. Considering education and learning, everybody will agree and say that it's important. Everybody yells it loud and clear. But we can say that under pressure of the IMF, and you know the links between the IMF and the EU, symbolically, the ancient IMF head is now the head of the European Central Bank, and the current head of the IMF is a former EU commissioner, so it looks like a revolving door amongst friends. But anyway, the IMF makes pressure on different states, Senegal, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, to reduce public expenditure. That means less expenditure on the resources available for education. This is quite a contradiction. We say, on the one hand, education is important. On the second hand, we say, oh, don't spend so much money. If the EU is serious in its partnership for education, then we need to stop with these IMF policies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Botenga, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Duno. Mauritius, you have the floor. 2 minutes.
I didn't ask for the floor.
Okay.
So there's an...
Very good.
But I would like to contribute, though, if you give me the floor.
The floor is yours.
So, sir, co-president, of 2 minutes, I will tell you many things that I was discussing with my friend and many members here that we have not discussed, that we parents, we are talking about platforms, we are talking about using tablets to do education, but we have not seen that we parents had to be the educator at home. Though working online, we had to also educate our child. But in many African countries, there are many issues. It's difficult for them because of internet. Ils n'ont pas l'accès à l'internet. C'est difficile de voir comment contribuer.
Without access to internet, it's very difficult to see how we can have access to education. We say there are 1.6 million children who have sort of lost a school year or two school years, and as the Italian representative from the commission said,
to have a very big impact on all our child and this generation that is going to come. And we also know that we have to come forward with the best solution. When my friend from Mali was saying that it has very big impact on at home with regards to sex, abuse of women, abuse of child sex, this is things that we need to cater about. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mauritius, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Mr. Manders. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, co-chair. A lot have been said, and of course this educational crisis will cause a gap in our future. Because there might be a lost generation, so we have to, if possible, to make up for those losses. I can really support a lot of contributions, but especially the words of our colleague Hannes Heide. So I want to be briefly. Perhaps it's an idea that the ACP EU can set up an organization that they, with let's say, retired teachers, that because we need more capacity for the coming years, we need more teachers, we need hands on the floor. And of course, it's good that the Commission come forward with programs, with money, etc. But if you have money, you don't have the teachers. So what we need is, and perhaps the retired people can help, and they want to do that for free even, perhaps we can set up an ACP EU organization in which we collect retired teachers, retired skillsmen, retired people who want to offer their skills to teach the children. And then perhaps we can close the gap a little bit, but that's work on the floor. And that's what we need. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that intervention and concrete proposal and for staying within the time limit as well. I now give the floor to Honorable Sithole, Mozambique. You have the floor. 2 minutes. Thank you.
Honourable colleagues, thank you. The crisis, the COVID crisis, had caused a critical situation in our education system, especially in developing countries such as Mozambique. As Secretary General Guterres of the United Nations announced in his message on the occasion of the 24th of January commemoration of the International Day for Education, he says that education should be seen as a public good and as a political priority to be recovered and rebuilt after the crisis that we've seen due to COVID-19. And in this message, the Secretary General of the United Nations said that 1.6 billion of students and pupils of different levels found their studies interrupted due to the health crisis, and that impact is still being felt today. So we need globally to act to ensure that the high number of school dropouts, children dropping out before basic literary skills have been acquired, continues to rise. And this further exacerbates inequality in the educational and school system, with many negative consequences deriving from this for sustainable development as well. So this is an appeal to humanity to come together around the topic of education, to make commitment so that schooling can be a global good with a pooled financing of education in developing countries, so that where the challenges in the education system are of a monumental scale. Mozambique is implementing the global program, trying to establish a system that is of high quality and inclusive for all its boys and girls. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mozambique, for that intervention. Well noted. And I'll give the floor to Ms. Maria Arena. You have 2.5 minutes.
Monsieur le Président, je vais utiliser une partie de mon temps.
President, I should like to use a part of my speaking time to comment on something that happened yesterday. And I wish to apologize as a European member for the fact that part of the delegation was not able to attend the reception last night due to logistical problems. Now, I've always been brought up to believe that one should show generosity as a host country, and unfortunately that was not done yesterday, and I think we should apologize on behalf of the European side. So as far as what happened in education, thank you. We've talked a great deal about education today, and in particular the problem of accessing education during the pandemic and also following the pandemic. In Europe, we saw that the children suffering the most from this situation were coming from disadvantaged backgrounds, in structures that were not really set up and adapted to their needs, and they weren't able to access distance learning because they simply didn't have the right tools available to them, and we saw that in developing countries as well. Now, there's some other aspects of education I'd like to talk about. The very form and format of education. When you talk about modern education or modern knowledge, and we tend to want to impose Western-style solutions to address different social and political problems that are found at the local level. And this idea of knowledge is often based on a logic of economic viability. Now, when we talk about digitalization and rebuilding education, it would be a good moment now to try and think about reconciling global understandings of what education should be and with local understanding of education, so that we can draw on local cultures, local riches to flesh out our educational systems. That would be a good thing to keep young people on board, not making them feel that they need to be cut off from their culture, but that they can be tied into their culture through their education system. And I think this is an important reflection for now.
Thank you very much for your intervention and for your thoughtfulness. Just very welcomed. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Edda Muka Bagwiza Wanda. You have the floor. You have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, President.
presenter because he has almost said all. I will just emphasize the following, Mr. President. There has been a negative impact, as it has been said, not only on students, but also on teaching profession. This pandemic further led to exclusions for marginalized or less privileged populations who could not afford technology, and those living in remote areas where internet connectivity is still a problem. So there is a need to build more resilient education systems that can withstand future crises and ensure continuity of educational provision and access to education services, especially for ACP countries. Mr. President, I think that to mitigate those challenges on education, there is a need of, for sure, re-enrollment of less privileged learners as being of great importance, especially for girls who are at the highest risk of dropping out. Provision of supportive environment to enable children to focus on learning, highlighting that parents and teachers have a critical role to play in this, especially those in undeserved areas. Nutrition programs are likely to be in high demand because of some households' loss of income during this the recession. I think this is very important. It calls on all of us to increase national budgets, and for sure through different partners and through different ways, so that national budgets can really afford the what we need in education. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Rwanda, for that intervention. I now give the floor to Ms. Verhenian.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Co-Chair. I will change to German. It's my language, and it's easier for me to talk in this language. So, die COVID-19-Krise hat...
The COVID-19 pandemic had a major impact on the education system, and schools are more than just a place of learning. Learning, in part, was replaced through online learning and other digital tools. But what makes schools special is the fact that it's a social space where people meet their friends, where they can provide, be given healthcare, basic meals as well. Some children coming from disadvantaged families seek shelter and refuge at school. And all of that became impossible during the pandemic, and we must draw lessons. Some colleagues said earlier, let's close everything, but not the schools. And I think that's something we had to learn during the pandemic. We had to learn in Europe and elsewhere that we weren't prepared for this type of crisis. We didn't know what would happen in the event of six-month closures of schools and such situations. So we must have a structural discussion of how we're going to allow those children to catch up, but also for children in the future, that how we're going to set up our systems. Yes, we can expand on infrastructure, learning infrastructure, but if you don't have teachers that are able to provide lessons online, that have proper teaching plans that allow them to reach children when they're not physically in school, when they are connecting via screens, telephones, and so on, then it won't be useful. So we have to invest in teachers, teacher training, infrastructure, and we need to develop systems that will allow us to keep schools open even in times of pandemic as much as possible, so we can find security mechanisms that will allow us to keep those open. Now, what we're learning here is that training and education is the very foundation of our societies and our and development. When education begins to crumble, and I know that 11 million children are likely permanently dropped out, lost from the system, that's a great loss. It's a great loss for our countries. So we must invest in education. and my appeal once again to the European Commission, in all our joint programs that we're developing for development aid, education must be at the very heart of it. It must be the foundation for businesses to be able to take their activities forward. If you don't have education in place, then we're really looking to generate many problems in the future and also in the midterm. Now, also on the issue of young women and girls and their access to education, they particularly suffered when schools were closed. They were often unable to access, they were married off early and so on forth. So it's important that young mothers are educated as well, so that the next generation will have a better start in life. So let's invest in education.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Ms. Verheyen. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Lamina, Sierra Leone. You have 2 minutes.
Mr. Co-President, honorable members, let me state from the outset that the 2020 new agreement gives protocol to regional barriers, especially that has to do with education. Mr. Co-President, the COVID-19 pandemic created the largest disruption of education system in history, affecting nearly 1.6 billion learners in 190 countries and in all of the continents. Mr. Co-President, the closure of schools and other learning spaces impacted 94% of the world's student population. And the global education involves the study of problems. Mr. Co-President, preventing a learning crisis from becoming a generational catastrophe requires urgent action for all of us. It is a global and common good for us to have the primary driver and progress that will touch the 17th Millennium Development Goals. Mr. Co-President, a global education is one that incorporates learning about the cultures, the geographies, the histories, the current issues, and on the world region. Mr. President, time may not permit me much, but permits me to outline the intricacies that involves. Number one, in order to mitigate the potentially devastating consequences of COVID-19 pandemic, government and stakeholders are encouraged to pursue a variety of ways in making decisions and taking actions in response to measures. These measures will include, Mr. President, number one, consolidating global solidarity to addressing the pervasiveness of COVID-19 education in its emergencies. Number two, suppressed transmission of the virus and planned throughout for schools reopenings. Number three, protect education financing and coordinate the impact. Number four, build a resilient education system for equitable, sustainable development and reimagine education and accelerate change in teaching and learning. OACPS country, past and present, need to redirect broadening space for education. Allow me to give the historical perspective of Sierra Leone's education. Mr. President, since the end of Sierra Leone's 2002 war, civil war, realized that governments have tried in their own to actually realign education. But I must state here that the 2018 presidential election gives opportunity to Sierra Leoneans for us to feel the blessings of the free and quality education under His Excellency President Mahdi Abio. I'm telling you, it has given access to children of basic education and senior secondary education free, and training teachers. It has given opportunity that cuts across religion, politics, tribes, and it has done a phenomenal task in the lives of Sierra Leoneans. Therefore, Sierra Leone needs the help of OACP and EU countries for us to boost the free and quality education in Sierra Leone for our sustainable development. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Sierra Leone. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Zungu, Tanzania. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-President. Let me again. The Tanzanian delegation is in line with the observation made in this agenda. Frankly speaking, the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on Tanzania education was great, as in other OACP member states. In this case, we strongly urge that with its mission on recovery education 2021, UNESCO, UNICEF, the World Bank, and the EU join forces to provide guidance and support to countries navigating the crisis. The collaboration of three organizations is ongoing as the education system continue to weather the storm of the unfolding pandemic. Strategies to curb the problem should be emanated on reopening schools, assessing students and learning levels and well-being and teaching. The success of learning upturned largely depend on the teachers who are on the front lines of delivering learning recovery program and supporting students' well-being. Those teachers need our support as parliamentarians. Implementing such programs will require significant political and financial commitment from politicians like us to strengthen the education system capacity and invest well in the future. According to a joint UNESCO-UNICEF and World Bank report, to date, less than 3% of government stimulus packages have been allocated to education. And in low and lower middle income countries, the share is less than 1%. Much more funding will be needed for immediate learning recovery, let alone for the transformed education that the world children and youth deserve and need. Thank you very much, Mr. Co-President.
Thank you very much, Tanzania, for that intervention. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Sefulo, Zambia. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you so very much, Mr. President. Zambia, like many other countries in Africa, was much very affected by the pandemic. In the wake of what happened in our education system, the government has moved on to employ 30,000 teachers to try and combat this just in this year. And we've also introduced free education from pre-grade ECE up to 12th grade to try and combat the effects of COVID-19 on our education system. But regardless of that, as a female parliamentarian, one of the worries that we find is that in a wake of the COVID-19, we saw a lot of teenage pregnancies and marriages, especially that I represent the rural community, a rural constituency. We found a lot of girls also going into these early marriages. Zambia has stiffened the punishment for early marriages, but in regard to that, we also see a huge gap. Today, I can say a child that is growing up in the rural Zambia is failed even before they start, compared to children that are growing up in the EU. We are putting those that are in the EU 20 steps ahead and telling them, on your marks, get set and go. A child that is growing up in Africa today finds it difficult to compete with children that are growing up here. Therefore, as the EU or the ACP EU, we need to employ strategies to make sure that we can advantage those children that are growing up in the rural setup or in the ACP. As it is, there's no competition. Our children growing up in remote areas are already failed. Coming to the education sector, a huge gap. Today, I can say a child that is growing up in the rural Zambia is failed even before they start, compared to children that are growing up in the EU. We are putting those that are in the EU 20 steps ahead and telling them, on your marks, get set and go. A child that is growing up in Africa today find it difficult to compete with children that are growing up here. Therefore, as the EU ACP EU, we need to employ strategies to make sure that we can advantage those children that are growing up in the rural setup or in the ACP. As it is, there's no competition. Our children growing up in remote areas are already failed. Coming to the education sector, to the education platforms that we have in Africa, or let me say the OSCP, I think as Africans also, we need to wake up to the fact that we need to employ strategies that will work for us in Africa. The education system that works up here does not work in Africa. So we need to employ strategies to make sure that we can do a lot of skill development because we have a lot of resources. And most of the times we are trained as children growing up there to be workers rather than being entrepreneurs. So we need to wake up and employ strategies so that we are the ones that are building the wealth in our countries. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Zambia. And I'll give the floor to Honorable Oyezecha, Nigeria. You have the floor. 2 minutes.
Existing inequalities in education, which is why a focus on equity and learning recovery is paramount as children return to school. The global disruption to education caused by the COVID-19 pandemic constitutes, as earlier mentioned by my colleagues, the worst education crisis on record. The crisis brought education system across the world to a halt, with school closures affecting more than 1.6 million learners. Education inequalities already existed way before the pandemic, with over 200 million primary and secondary school age kids out of school for various reasons. And I will say here that from Nigeria, we have a great challenge before COVID-19 pandemic, our children, our girls were abducted from school by Boko Haram insurgents. And as I speak, most of those children and girls that had been adopted had not been taken back. As we speak, we do not know their whereabouts. And so when we talk about recovery, when we talk about training children, we are faced with a situation where our parents can't allow their children even to go to school because the security is not just there. When you take your children to school, they come and kidnap and abduct these people. Sometimes they take hundreds of girls and marry them out to themselves inside the forest. And the question is, why are we not helping the Nigerian people to recover these girls? As we speak, Chibok girls are not recovered yet, most of them. So, Mr. President and honorable colleagues, we have a challenge that is more than COVID-19. And if you know what that means, we are faced with this COVID-19 incident. We are faced with challenges of not being able to leave our children to school, not be able to send them to school in the first place. In the southern Nigeria, as we speak, Mondays are closed by non-state actors. People can't go to work on Mondays every week. And so how do children face the world? How do they get education? How do they even know that they need to go to school when the parents will not even allow them to go to school? So we have these challenges. And I believe that this is a forum that I'm bringing this to the front burner, that Nigerian case is a case that is very, very pathetic. And having said this, Mr. Chairman, I believe that now is the time to shift from crisis to recovery, to help countries that are faced with not just COVID-19 outbreak and post-COVID-19, but countries that are facing war on people who are now governing the country, where non-state actors dictate the way to go, dictate when we come, dictate when we go. So, President, I believe that the way forward is adopting the best country strategies and tailoring make for each country using existing multilateral structures present in each country. And in other words, and simply put, it is an opportunity for education reform to help countries revisit their education curriculum and make them relevant to the development questions each country has to answer, because it's very divergent. It's not like, it's not the same thing everywhere. It's different with different kind of people. So I submit.
Thank you very much, Nigeria, for that intervention. I now give the floor to Honorable Kama, Kenya. You have 2 minutes.
Oops. Thank you, Mr. President, for allowing us to give the Kenyan experience on the effects of the crisis on the education sector. Like most countries, Kenya was highly affected and distracted by this pandemic. We were in the middle of changing our program to competency-based curriculum, which started in 2017, and we were completely disrupted because we were moving from the classroom chalk and talk to a student-focused competency-building curriculum, which required a lot of presence of teachers with students. Our school programs were disrupted for a complete 9 months. So schools were closed, and this year is actually a crisis year in Kenya because we are just in the tail end of the first exam for the secondary schools, and we must have a second exam before the end of the year. So both the students and the teachers are in real crisis as far as the teaching is concerned. But we have learned a lot of lessons out of this, and the Ministry of Education has seen new opportunities, and our new norm is coming that distance learning is going to be part of the education program. And in fact, what is going to happen is that the best teachers are going to be teaching online, teaching a cluster of schools in the regions. What that means is that we have to change the financing of our education completely so that we go not only for the competency learning, but we have to go into the ICT infrastructure. I know this is going to affect a lot of countries here, and my appeal, even as we are talking of our new relationship between SEP and EU, is that investment should really go into the education sector so that we raise a generation of people. Let's not just recover from the pandemic, but raise a generation that will make this world a little bit better. So partnership in education is going to be key in any relationship that is going to come in the future, the way I see it. For us to be able to fulfill what was promised to our children years back, that we need to have free and compulsory education internationally, basic education internationally, it is very important that we make it easy by investing together, joining hands, and any collaboration should really touch on the education in all corners of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kenya, for that intervention. I now give the floor to Honorable Imbakwan Mali. You have the floor. 2 minutes.
Co-President, à ce stade, je passe. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much, Mali, for ceding and yielding the floor. We have come to the last speaker of our speakers list. I will now give the floor back to Mr. Rosa for some reaction. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that the discussion today was definitely very timely, and I think that many of the parliamentarians highlighted the problems that I tried to present in the opening. What I can say is that education remained very high in the agenda of the European Commission, and as I said and I repeat, the EU has strengthened its commitment on education precisely in the light of the COVID crisis. Under the new multi-annual financial framework 2021-2027, Commissioner Urpilainen has committed to increase EU external funding for education from around 7% to at least 10%, and in order to improve education worldwide. The increased EU external budget for education and skills is estimated at over 6 billion, including country and regional programs, Erasmus Plus, and contribution to global initiatives such as the Global Partnership for Education and Education Cannot Wait. Of these 6 billion, around 3.6 billion will finance directly ICP country and region, including 592 million that will be implemented through the Erasmus Plus program. EU resources will mainly feed into Team Europe initiative on education and training to pull resources and expertise from across the EU and bring a transformational impact on the ground. We already foresee Team Europe initiative addressing skills and education in 45 countries, the majority that are in sub-Saharan Africa. Then I would say I would not enter into the main detail, but I think that we have as a Global Partnership for Education, that is a multilateral initiative focusing on the provision of good quality basic education for all girls and boys in an inclusive, equitable way. This Team Europe and African partners will join forces with the Global Partnership for Education to transform education system and thereby boost jobs and growth, drive gender equality, and build a resilient, prosperous, and inclusive society. Another program that is worth to mention is the Regional Teachers Initiative, because we consider that well-trained and motivated teachers are central to quality education and improved learning outcomes. The Team Europe Regional Teachers Initiative aims to identify common challenges that affect teachers in participating countries. It will foster innovative solutions and enhance the competence and skills, including digital literacy and skill. And then last but not least, I think that we have the Youth Mobility for Africa. The Team Europe Initiative on Youth Mobility for Africa will promote youth exchange and mobility in Africa and between Africa and in Europe. It will gather all relevant EU programs, such as Erasmus Plus, under its umbrella, and offer a critical mass of scholarships and internships. By helping to strengthen the higher education space and promote the continent as a study destination for African students, it will support African continental integration as well. In the Latin American Caribbean region, as well as in Asia and the Pacific, as I said. So I think that to conclude, the EU recognized that OECPS-EU joint work in the field of education brought significant results. No more than ever, the COVID pandemic has showed the importance of investing in education, skills and culture. The EU believes that we should strengthen our joint effort to build international solidarity to address the global education crisis in the wake of the COVID pandemic. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosa. We have come to the end of our item on the building international solidarity to address the global education crisis in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. It has been a very rich discussion, very, very good to hear experiences from the ACP countries as well as the EU countries in terms of the challenges faced. In many instances, it seems that the education challenges have now been further compounded by the COVID-19 pandemic, and the need for partnership is much more urgent now. Very much welcome, very constructive dialogue, as well as some very useful proposals and concrete proposals on the way forward and some strategies. Welcome as well the announcement we just heard of the increase for education as well from the European Union, and that is something that I'm sure the OACPS will look to welcome in terms of its implementation in our countries. Thank you very much for your participation. We'll break now for a coffee break, and we'll return at 11. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.